from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 122 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason. Tonight, I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Yep.
Yep. One of those nights, isn't it?
One of those fucking days. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're all having days, but you know, we're here. We're talking some crypt. But what could be better?
I mean, do you really want
a foot rub? First of all, I've stated my affinity and love for foot rubs. Like, I'm not a Quentin Tarantino feet fetishist, which, by the way, I was going to say about that too, about Thanksgiving. That's a whole other story. That there's definitely a scene in there that I think Quentin Tarantino's buddy shot just for him. But yeah, man, like, having my feet rubbed is one of my favorite things in the world.
I'm too ticklish, but
I know.
I'll totally count to it. I get a pedicure about 3-4 times a year or so. And when they scrub the feet, I just start cracking up.
So my question is, if you want to share this, do you have are the women in there talking shit about your feet when you leave?
I mean, no, I don't, okay. Don't usually pay attention. No, I haven't heard anything.
I deal with a lot of bare feet, and I've seen, I'm not going to name names, Courtney, but, I shouldn't use his real name. I gotta use any name.
We'll do a little slide whistle.
He's not gonna listen to that. He's not gonna listen to this. But he's a great dude. I love the guy to death. But he has some pretty nasty ass feet, like some pretty fucked up feet. And he goes and gets pedicures. I'm wondering. I don't know. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all.
Speaking about feet and Tarantino, as we most of you might know,
that could be his alternate universe name, Feetin. Tarantino.
Tarantino. So Mick Garris's podcast is coming to an end. I think they just released the last episode.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tarantino was the guest.
Oh, nice.
What's really funny is, for those of you that might remember, back in October, we had Joe Russo, his producer, on as a guest to do Trick or Treat. And usually, you know, he talks a little bit about Mick and what's coming up on the show. And he was like oddly quiet that night about it. Mm. And I wasn't sure if that was intentional or not. And at the end, when I usually do like, oh, so tell us where we can find you and stuff, I had to like prompt him to talk about the show. I was like, there's something going on. And then like a couple days after that is when they made their announcement about the show ending. So I was emailing with him. He's like, yeah, I just didn't want to, I don't know if I should talk about it or not. I just don't want to tip my hand on anything.
It's a bummer, but it's, you know,
seven years. I'm like, yeah, come
things come to an end sometimes, you know?
And I mean, hopefully,
especially it's not like, you know, Mick Garris, it's not like he was phoning in on this podcast either. He wasn't just setting up and this is the I love Bill Burr's podcast, but he just presses record on a Zoom recorder and starts talking shit. And it's hilarious. But that's easy. Right. I'm not saying it's easy. It's still an acquired skill.
Well, it's a talent, but this takes a lot more effort.
Yeah. Your time drains a lot less. So when you have to line up guests and you of all people know how that goes. So,
I'm hoping is that this means that he's actually going to get back into more active producing, maybe directing and writing
back in the movies.
That'd be very cool.
Maybe during the strike and all that, he was able to build up some stuff to work on. And now he can, get more action on it. So if the losing the podcast means we get more content from Wizard Mick, then I think it'll be all right.
And you know what, like, if he's not loving it anymore, like, don't do it anymore.
Well, they won an award this year for like best podcast. I can't remember what it was called, but they're like, might as well go out on top.
And
they had like James Wan and John Carpenter, Mary Lambert. Yeah, they had some amazing guests running up to the end. So if you're going to go out like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Tonight, we are talking about the Tales from the Crypt episode, Here Today, Gone Tomorrow, which is season 7, episode 12, which came out on July 12th, 1996. Jody, give us a plot synopsis.
not to tip my hand too much about how I feel about this episode, but you were talking about going out on top, and as we trudge our way through season 7, there's a reason why it's good to go out on top. Mm-hmm. All right.
Don't Mondo, please. I saw your gears turning.
All right. So we open up on the Crypt Keeper working at the Slay Mart as a cashier and, you know, doing all that, a little costume, which is the best part of this episode by far. And then we start the actual story. We meet a safe cracker named Glenn, who is trying to crack a safe, you know, with the stethoscope and all that. We hear that the cops are on their way, but he is just not getting it. He fails to open the safe, and his accomplice, Henry, knocks him out. We find out that this was all a test, that they were he was trying to impress a crime lord named Malcolm, but because he has a lot of gambling debt, and Malcolm now has that in his hands, and Malcolm wants to use him, but he's just not where he used to be anymore. Malcolm's intending to kill Glenn for failing, and Henry beats him with a pool cue. But then Malcolm's wife, Kate, comes in and stops him. Glenn has lost some of his hearing in jail after a beating, and that's why he can't do the safes anymore. And Kate persuades Malcolm to spare Glenn's life. Malcolm gives him 5 days to pay off his debt or die. Later, Kate finds Glenn at a bar and reveals she has cat eyes. She pulls down her sunglasses and there's cat eyes behind there. She wants Glenn to help her break into Malcolm's safe, and she says that she knows a surgeon who's doing the experimental treatments, including ear treatments, and she brings him back to her house. And then a guy walks by in the background. Is it Malcolm actually walking by in the background the whole time, every time?
Yeah, I think so, because we see him again, like, in the garden or something.
Yeah, he's supposedly out of town, but he just kind of walks by in the background, and Glenn's really nervous in the house, and he acts kind of suspicious towards Kate, because she tells him to follow her, tells him to follow her to her room, and she makes phone call and secures this surgeon to help him. And then afterwards, Kate immediately strips all her clothes off and has sex with Glenn, acting very cat-like, licking her hands, you know, doing cat stuff, which, you know,
not for me.
Yeah, no. It's something. And then again, Malcolm just kind of walks by in the background and observes what's happening there.
I got a thought of the people that'll walk around wearing cat ears.
Yeah.
And how I find it just like ridiculous. Whatever people want to do is cool with me. But I thought, somehow I got a picture in my head of Jason wearing cat ears. I'm like, that'd be the fucking best thing ever. For some reason, a big bald dude with a big beard, that would be funny.
Balding,
sorry.
Balding.
From my vantage point.
I have some precious hairs left.
Okay.
Yeah, those on the sides. They don't leave easy. All right. When Glenn meets with the surgeon, he explains that he is implanting animal parts, and that's how he's improving things. He wants to improve Glenn's hearing by giving him the auditory system of an owl. And then Glenn immediately faints. And when he wakes up, his hearing is so powerful that he has to wear headphones to talk to the doctor. And they said he'll get used to it over time. And so Glenn goes back to Kate, tells her he feels great. He can hear all these things he shouldn't be able to hear. He can hear her heartbeat from across the room. And he's much more confident now. They go to Malcolm's secret safe, not his normal secret safe, but his big one that's behind a bookshelf where he keeps all his real money. And he can hear the lock mechanisms as he turns the little knobs without even using a stethoscope. Quickly is able to crack the safe, opens it up, it's full of money. And then Glenn pulls a gun on Kate and shoots her in the gut so he can take all the money for himself. And she coughs up a hairball as she dies. Glenn then loads all the money into a couple suitcases, and then one of them spills open as he's carrying it back. And while he's gathering it all up, Kate shows back up because now she has 9 lives, I guess. and then Glenn starts hooting. He just starts hoo 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 hoo, and a beak breaks out of the middle of his face, and there's feathers, and his head spins around backwards. and then he wakes up on the surgeon's table, and Malcolm and Kate are both there, and they explain to him that he's a test subject, that they're going to improve on the animal transplants, they're going to eventually use it on themselves, and then the doctor takes a bone saw and saws into Glenn's head. The end. That's how he's an owlman.
Owlman.
There you go.
That doctor has definitely at one point implanted a snake in someone's penis. Like, it just has to happen, right? Like,
sure. Why not?
All right, Mondo, you can start us off now. What do you think of this episode?
You know what? There's nothing like offensively bad in this. Like, at no point was I was like, oh, it's date rapey or anything like that. Like we said in the past, but it was a boring episode. It was boring. It was convoluted. The story just wasn't good. The whole cat thing was immediately. Like, Jody, I bet you were the same way I was. The minute he shot her, I'm like, oh, it's cool. She has 9 lives. It's fine. Oh, yeah, she's coming back in the next scene.
No,
and it's still like the whole thing with her husband really didn't make a ton of sense. Yeah, it was a bet over it's. And what is it with doctors and horror movies being like the most skilled doctors and surgeons to ever live?
Right. Yeah, if he can do all these transplants, he could have gotten a like good job that pays really well somewhere.
Exactly. And like, you look at it as how the fuck did the guy become an owl at the end? That made zero sense to me, because did you like rip the guy's head off and stretch his skin over an owl and then reattach his head? They
replaced his auditory system, and yet for some reason there's a beak behind his skin. Yeah.
And like they replaced her eyes, but she's coughing up hairballs. Like, what in the do you fucking, like, is she licking up hair all day? Like, is she just, maybe, I don't know.
In real life, sometimes they'll use like pig arteries, like on a heart transplant.
You don't become a
pig. They dig for truffles afterwards.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be awesome. Like, you're just on a hike around. With some friends, and you're just like, I'll be right back. It's fine. Jody's just pig truffling over there. Like, fuck.
Well, it's also because we already kind of did this in the very like second episode, Dig That Cat, where someone gets an animal transplant, where he gets like a part of his brain implanted with a cat, part of a cat brain, and then he has 9 lives. But that was like, that was good.
No one had to pop out of their face.
And you know, we talk about like the Tales from the Crypt formula, and this was had nothing to do with it. It didn't know if it wanted to be a mystery or if it wanted to be super, whatever. And there's nothing fun about it. There's nothing horror about it. Even the effects with the owl at that point, I was just so like lost in this. I'm like, I just don't even care now. And maybe those effects might be better than I'm giving them credit for. We've also all had rotten days, so who knows? Maybe we're just projecting, but I'm going to say this is going to be down on the totem pole for me as far as Tales episodes, man.
Yeah, like Amanda said, I didn't find this offensive, but it was just kind of like, it was convoluted yet predictable all at the same time. Mm-hmm.
It offended me by the time I spent watching it. Like, that's the only thing I can... Like, when it's a 24 minute episode of TV and I'm looking at the clock, I'm like this episode's been going on for an hour and a half already. Like,
yeah. What is interesting is that when we very first started this podcast or whatever, and I was doing some research, and I was Googling around, and then I saw an image of the guy with the beak coming out of his face. And I was like, oh, that must be really cool. I can't wait to see that. And like every episode we watch, I've been waiting for that to happen, and we had to wait till the second to last episode of the entire series,
and then it wasn't even good.
I like the effect. I'll say it looks good. I think if there's one positive, I'll say the effects are on par with, you know, the usual Crypt effect level.
Yeah, I think I was just totally so turned off by the episode at that point. It wasn't going to save it for me.
Yeah. But within the story, it's so silly that you're just kind of eye rolling it.
Yeah.
On the practical level, yes, it's a good effect.
Yeah. The effect is decent, but my response wasn't, oh, what a cool thing happening. I was like, oh,
you're like, why?
That's stupid. Like, his head spun around. He hooted.
So the guy has now supersonic hearing, basically, right? They should have gone straight Freddy's Dead with this. And had it where they kill him with some loud noise, his head explodes or something cool. Like, fucking owl, man. God damn it.
Like, who really wants supersonic hearing? Yeah, for that one time you crack a safe, but like every other moment of your life is going to be excruciating.
Who indeed, Jason? Who?
Who?
All right, Jordy.
Yeah, it started okay, I think. Like, I think the premise is fine with this safecracker who wants to, you know, get good and get revenge and all this stuff. Sure, okay, I'm fine with all that. But it just goes to such a stupid place. Like, in the moment she randomly has cat eyes and we have beaks appear, is it even a climax if you just kind of groan after it happens? Like, okay, that's dumb. Hey, you know, some climaxes are better than others, but this one was anticlimactic. Let's say that.
Yeah. Like, it needed like another extra twist. Like, because we all know that she's going to double cross him. Yeah. Right. Yada, yada.
We know she's got 9 lives.
Like, yeah. We've seen this before.
All I'm going to remember about this is Birdface and thinking how dumb that was. Like, good effect or not, it was dumb. It was a dumb twist.
I'm trying to remember, what year did Island of Dr. Moreau come out? Yeah, it came out the same year. So I'm wondering if they're like
the original though came out like in the 60s.
Yeah, the original was, I think, the 70s. I don't know what the book
came out for. But realistically, I don't think it was like a 95, I think, Island of Dr. Moreau came out.
I'm looking up, it's 96.
96.
So,
but I don't remember that being that big of a movie to where people be going out of their way to
copy.
Maybe inspired by the original, but.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether like the trailers came out or something like, cool, animals are now big, or maybe just in the effects world. I don't know.
A lot of animals are big already. Like,
human animals. Have you guys actually watched that movie?
What's that?
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Wild.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's such a weird movie. I also put it into relative at how tall Jason is, because like, if we're on a hike and a bear shows up, like, he might just think Jason's one of them. Like, he might just kill me and think Jason's like you want in on this, because it's fresh meat.
I have been confused for a bear before.
I think, like, if you ever, you know, if your life totally changed and you figured out, hey, maybe I do want to explore this other lifestyle, I think you'd be like the Betty Davis of the bear community.
I don't have those Billy Davis eyes.
Or the you'd be the I don't know who a sex icon is nowadays.
No. All right. Just to get into the talent a little bit, this is directed by a guy named Christopher Hart. And according to his IMDb, he only has one other directing credit, one other real credit. It's a movie from 1986 called Eat and Run. The tagline is, a 40s style detective traces missing persons to a tubby man eating alien who likes spicy food.
I'd probably watch that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, interesting. This was written actually by Ed Capia, who is the production manager on many, many, many seasons of Tales from the Crypt. He was been on the Alan and Gill's podcast. I met him at a convention once. Super nice guy. He was also a production manager on Rob Zombie's Halloween movies.
That's might be inexcusable.
He had some interesting stories about Rob Zombie. I mean, he didn't write the movie. He's, you know, it's a job, but he told me some interesting stories.
Did you ever see when John Carpenter went off on Rob Zombie?
Mm-mm, but
because Rob, he was pissed at Rob Zombie because he's saying when Rob Zombie first got the rights to Halloween, he called John Carpenter, and John Carpenter said, yeah, do it, make it your own. Like, just don't worry about what I did, make it your own movie. And I wish you the best. I think, you know, you have a good eye for this. And, all the interviews Rob Zombie did was talk about how John Carpenter didn't want him to make the movie. And John Carpenter's like, what the fuck? He goes, he completely just lied. I was nothing but supportive with them. And then afterwards, I love it. Because you got to love John Carpenter, grumpy old John Carpenter, who goes, and the movie wasn't really good because, and he explains why, which is the exact reason why. And but I love that he's like, he's being supportive afterwards, because if not, you're bashing me, I'll tell you how much your movie sucks, Mr. Zombert.
Yeah. And also did the show Stand Against Evil.
I
remember that.
That's a fun show.
The episode stars Robert Lindsay as a safecracker, who is a very well-known British actor. I don't recognize. I mean, like, I don't know the stuff, but based on what I read, he's extremely big over there.
Who? John Richard Johnson?
I'm sorry?
Did they say Richard Johnson?
No.
Robert Lindsay. I'm sorry.
But he did do, he was in the American movie Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Gretchen Palmer did a lot of TV. She was in Wishmaster. Richard Johnson, though, he's had a hell of a career. He was in the old school The Haunting and Lucio Fellucci's Zombie.
It's called Lucio Fellucci?
What they say? You know, I can't pronounce that.
Inexcusable. Inexcusable.
Phil Davis, who's the henchman, he was in Pink Floyd The Wall, The Howling 5, Alien 3, and most recently Mr. Holmes. And then I love a deranged doctor character. Mm-hmm. This guy's a good character actor. David Gantz, he was in Gandhi, Brazil, Braveheart, and then he did the voice work in Dark Souls 1 and 2 and a ton of other video games. So again, we've got some British heavyweights working here. And they're fine. They're good. But I think they just don't have much to work with. All right, Jody, let's talk about the comic.
Real fast, I can't send you guys an image for some reason in chat, but you just have to look up the cover for this movie, Eat and Run.
Oh, I did. It's,
it's about like
the cover of that movie.
Like, I'm looking at the cover and I'm thinking, the owl makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this comic. Man. We're just hitting everything tonight. Haunt of Fear, number 11, February 1952. Script by Bill Gaines and Al Feldstein. Pencils by Jack Davis. This is just one of those that they just found a title and went with the title for this one, because this comic has absolutely nothing to do with the finished episode. It's about a couple of guys who need to pay back a debt of fertilizer using human bones, and so they dig up underneath a graveyard and they steal these human bones, and then they get beaten to death by corn. Like, cornfield attacks them and kills them.
Because they're stealing the bones to make the fertilizer. Corn
shows up in a time machine. And
yeah.
It's the corn that used the fertilizer that they stole the bodies from.
Sure, yeah. It's revenge of the bones. But, I mean,
Children of the Corn?
By corn. Like,
I kind of want to see, I'd like to see this that made as a direct adaptation.
I love any episode we do where Jody's just like over the shit, because he's like the most positive person. And when he's when he has disdain for something, it shines through like I'm
like a I just don't know what to do with an owl man and getting beaten to death by corn when it comes to talking about this, like, in a serious way. Like, dude, I had nothing, man.
I'll watch some wacky shit, but I need it to be fun, at least. Like, you're entertaining.
Right. Well, apparently this, like, they took the script from a different comic that was called Bats in My Belfry, but they couldn't use that because in that, he gets a transplant from a vampire bat. And so to make it an owl and have an owl face pop out, they couldn't use Bats in My Belfry. So they instead, they used a comic where people get beaten to death by a field of corn.
Yeah, I think they're in the same mode. They're just like, fuck it.
Yeah, it works. No, this is the next to the last episode. And I just have a feeling that there was a feeling on set of like, let's just finish this at this point, you know? Although they decided to animate the next one for some reason. I don't we'll talk about that one when we get to it.
It's such like almost a Monty Python ending, right? To have the last episode be animated.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Anyway, that's the comic. That's all of it.
Yeah.
I always thought that song "Cats in the Cradle," the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon should have been the bats in the belfry and the silver. I don't know why. I just think it'd be funny.
The Ugly Kid Joe version, or
I didn't know Ugly Kid Joe did a version.
Oh, really? Yeah, that was
because he hates everything about everybody. So that guy's a jerk.
Early 90s rock grunge, I'm in this Facebook group where people like have movie props and whatnot, and they just kind of show them off. Sometimes they sell them or whatnot. Yeah. Someone had the wolf from the Three Little Pigs Primus music video.
Oh,
okay. I was like,
the green jelly video.
The green jelly video. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If I find that, I'll send it to you guys. I was like, oh my God, that's cool.
They're still playing too. They played down here, I think, about a year ago. I was going to go. I just didn't. No offense to Green Jelly, but like as old as I am now, there are times I'll buy tickets to a concert that I want to go to and then just not go when the day comes because I'm fucking old. But I think it's cool they're still playing music. Yeah. That was like, I don't remember a ton of early music videos, but that one I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. 100%.
That's huge.
Man, speaking of movie props, they were selling John Carpenter's site. They were selling movie props in the Mouth of Madness books.
Ooh. Yeah, I saw that.
But like, and this is not a knock on it. Like, it'd be cool to have, but no certificate of authenticity. He wouldn't sign them. And I'm like, I'm not paying $300 unless if he signed it. I probably would have bought it.
Yeah. All right, let's do our episode rating and put this one to bed. Jody.
I'm not even going to tuck it in. It's going to.
Man, this is like a 2. Like, I guess, you know, the effect was fine at the end, so I'll give it that. But it's like you said, it's not like horribly offensive. It's just a chore to watch, I think. Like, it's boring. It's boring and bad. No. Like, it's like there's nothing that's going to jump out and I'm like, oh, that was painful. I just ended it with a
you kind of said it best in the beginning. You're like, well, that was an episode. Like, yeah, it was an episode. And, you know, every great series is entitled to that. But it's just a lot in season 7. And makes me harken back to the days when we were doing season 4.
Amanda, what's your rating?
I'm going to give it 1.5. I can't go 1 because there are worse episodes. Like in the way Jody says, like it's not offensively bad. There's nothing in it. I'm like, ooh, don't do that. Although maybe some of the Safecrackers advances are kind of, but I can't quite go a 2 because I think 2 means it was just mediocre. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was mediocre. I think it was bad.
Sure.
I'm on the Jody side with this too. I know we're only splitting like a half point difference, but yeah.
It's fine.
I thought the first 30 seconds were tense when you think he's trying to open the safe fine, and then you know the effects, at least I felt like they were, you know, trying.
I did like the antagonist too, because for something about it, like I love when you have these rich looking guys who are like, I'll just come back in and slit his throat and then we'll just get rid of the body, no big deal. Like how matter of fact and nonchalantly they ooh, yeah. I always kind of love that trope.
Yeah. All right.
I worry sometimes in jiu-jitsu if I'm going too hard on somebody. Here's a guy that's like, I'll just slit his throat, no big deal.
Courtney.
So Courtney's one of the dudes I rolled with on my first day in jiu-jitsu ever, and he was a blue belt. And now I smashed the fuck out of him. But to his credit, he's got a lot of injuries. He's an older guy, older in his 50s. And man, like to anybody out there, if anybody out there does jiu-jitsu, listens to this, like if you're doing it in your 50s, like fuck yeah, man, like you are who I aspire to be. And 10 years age difference is a lot when it comes to combat sports. Like,
oh yeah, I'm sure
it's a thing. Like at 40 years old, there are times I'm the oldest grappler on the mat, and it's definitely like I'm fucking have trouble with those kids, man. They can just move, and it's like my body doesn't move that way anymore. My injuries are there, you know. That's what it is.
After 40, I think every year is like 10 extra years.
Yeah, you know what? It feels like that way, man. But I've always said like keeping active is probably the best thing I ever did in my life was getting active, because I know like the past couple of weeks I've been sick and I've been traveling, so I haven't gotten any exercise in or any training, and my body feels worse than when I'm constantly training. So I'm always in moving, stretching, and warming those muscles up. And I think movement's just important for everybody. Like, and I never learned that until like 5 years ago, but I wish I'd learned that younger.
All right, Mondo, give us your song of the day.
So what I picked this week was, actually it's inspired by Jody here. So I get a message from Jody the other day, and it goes, what would you consider the band Blind Guardian to be? I'm like, oh yeah, they're power metal. They're fantasy style metal. Mm-hmm. Interesting fact, they started out more as like a thrash speed metal band in the 85, I think. They're called Lucifer's Heritage. Mm-hmm. And then surprisingly, all the same band members except for the drummer. I think the drummer is the only, I think all the other members have been in the band since 87, which is a feat for any band. And they also do this, they have a song called, the most famous song is called Valhalla. And I really will challenge everyone out there to go on YouTube and just type in Blind Guardian Valhalla Live and watch the epic live performance they do, where the crowd will not stop singing the chorus, but the band like doesn't know what to do. They're like, what do? We just roll with it, or we just like, yeah. And the song's over. It's a really, I've seen them live before, and it's a really powerful thing. Power metal is not my favorite genre, genre inside of metal, but every now and again, like, there are some bands like this which do produce some gems. But one cool thing they did back in 2020 is they released what they called the definitive Christmas song. Because when you guys are hearing this, it's going to be a week before Christmas. Like, we'll have another episode before then. I figured I want to do a Christmas song this week. So the song is called Merry Xmas, Everybody, by Blind Guardian. And I don't know if it's on iTunes. I didn't check. It's on YouTube. It's probably on iTunes and Spotify. It was a single they released. But if you guys like more of the fantastical power metal, man, give it a shot. It's a fun song and a fun band.
Very good. I'm looking it up to see what's on Spotify.
It's all on Spotify, yes.
The problem with power metal is, and this is also the problem with black metal, and is there's so many bands out there that just don't do it well. And you know what? Like, more powerful for trying, but like, sometimes you got to just know, like, dude, that this singer can't hit these notes. We got to get a new singer, or our guitar. You know, it's just one of those things. But there's some good power metal out there, like Blind Guardian. Eternal Champion is one I think I've talked about on here before. They are not on Spotify or iTunes. If you find them on there, it is a different Eternal Champion band. But they're on Bandcamp, and they're just fucking incredible, in my opinion. Also in Jodi is, they write these the lead singer, I think it's the lead singer, who writes these fantasy novels, and all the albums are based off those novels that he writes.
Now, I have a question, because there was a video game on the Sega Genesis called Eternal Champion. Is there any relation to the band?
Hold on.
It's probably not, but I played the shit out of it when I was a kid. So
I remember Eternal Champion. That was like, that was kind of Sega's answer to Mortal Kombat or something. Yeah, exactly. Like that.
Their own version of Mortal Kombat.
Man, we could totally do an episode on old forgotten fighting games, because there are so many old fighting games. Like, because when Mortal Kombat got big, everyone was trying to jump on that. You know what? Patreons, let us know. Do you want a video game episode? We'll talk about some old fighting games. I don't know. Are you guys in for this?
Yeah.
Some Clay Fighter.
Yeah, of course. Clay Fighter. Primal Rage.
Did you ever play Weapon Lord?
Was that the one you could chop limbs off with?
Yes. So Weapon Lord is batshit crazy to where I think Mortal Kombat's brutality system came from Weapon Lord, because the goal was to finish the match with a special move. And then, like, I remember one of the barbarians, if you finish with an uppercut swing, he'd swing his sword, it'd cut their head off. Then he did the sword again, it would cut their head in half and the brain would fall out. And then if he did the next move, he'd jump up and like impale them with the sword. And right. it was a really cool concept. And then, you know, the Nintendo 64 came out, all those 3D fighting games, which most were not good, but every now and again, they tried it. Like Gods. I think it was actually called Gods of War, or War Gods. War Gods is one of them. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first ever like true 3D fighting games. But I will stand by Mortal Kombat 4, the N64 version, being pretty tits.
Yeah, again, no, cool. my jam was Soul Calibur on Dreamcast.
Dude, Soul Calibur was fun. A Capcom versus SNK.
Yeah,
or Capcom versus Marvel. I didn't like Capcom versus Marvel because felt like, and this is like that game. If to be really great at it, you have to be good, right?
No, but, I mean, it was very very much a gimmick, but it was still really fun.
But you could button mash on that game and still win a lot of matches, and that's like what you couldn't do in Capcom versus SNK. And I like the more technical aspect of it. You know, I thought that I was good at fighting games. And then I think when Street Fighter 5 came out or 4 came out, I started playing online and went like 1-30. And I was like, I'm not good at these games. And then you realize I went to down here in Vegas. I used to have, I think it's called EVO, which is the fighting game championships. And I went there and watched, and how insane those guys are that play. They study frame by frame the animations, and like train themselves to know when to put combo. It's so crazy. Like, and again, more power to the guys. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying I just can't. My brain doesn't work that way. I can never figure that out in a million years.
I was watching this documentary that a series on YouTube about Mortal Kombat, and they did a thing about Mortal Kombat 2, how the first match you play was always easy, and then the next one they intentionally took out frames that you could not perform an action that the opponent could. So they got your confidence up, and then they like intentionally cheated so you'd lose the second one to get you to put in more quarters.
That's brilliant. And you know, a lot of those games too, they had difficulty settings that the arcade owner could ramp up or dim down. Yeah.
Well, I knew they had like debug settings. Yeah. But I know that the, it was like, it was adjustable difficulties.
Yeah. I don't know if that one did, but a lot of them did have adjustable difficulties.
Like, I think it's called rubber banding.
Well, yeah, you should share this documentary with your friends. I think you have friends that would like to see this documentary, Jason. There's
a Slack community that had a spooky gaming section. Speaking of which, update, we both finished RoboCop last week. And that game rules.
RoboCop was, so what's funny is all the bashing I heard about it online, we're like, man, it's the same thing over and over again. I'm like, fucking RoboCop destroying us. If I had one criticism of the game, it's just at the beginning, you start doing it like you're just walking to the police station to go to your thing, and some guy's like, RoboCop, can you help me find my towel?
Yeah. And it's like, well, no, there's a guy in the shower asking you that.
RoboCop's time? Yeah, and he's in the shower stall.
He's in the shower. I was like, well, this is going to get weird. Yeah. I see enough Paul Van Horn movies to know that shit can get weird quick.
Yeah, some of that's weird, but overall, man, it's a fun ass game of just being RoboCop. And then the boss fights, though, are like that last boss fight is legitimately hard.
Yeah, no, I totally had to turn down the difficulty to get through that last one. And then there's another one where you face down like a military group, and like I didn't have any healing things left right before I entered that, and like there's no way to go back and like buff up your healing.
Yeah.
So like I was like, crap, I gotta turn down the difficulty for this.
I play a lot. I played this on a medium, but I do play a lot of games on easy. Like once the game frustrates me, it's fucking easy mode. Like,
no shame.
Life is frustrating enough. Video games are supposed to be fun.
I mean, that's why I've said Stardew Valley is like one of my favorite games of all time, because they're, except for like I don't go to the dungeon that often there, because then I get stressed out like in that dungeon sometimes because it's getting late and your wife wants you back in bed and it's like, but fuck, I'm on level 99 and yeah.
But I mean, yeah, but for the record, there's actually a really good story in RoboCop. Like
I thought so too. The story was good. And again, the gameplay, like, people were complaining, like, and don't get me wrong, the first time I'm like, why the fuck can't I jump? Why the fuck can't I crouch and hide behind things? And I'm like, oh, that's right.
It's a robot.
I'm fucking RoboCop. I can fucking just blow through these motherfuckers. And it is fun how powerful you are against a standard criminal. But then when you meet the militia members and stuff, it gets more and more difficult. And I think it's a really cool way. And I do think one of the lost arts in video games, and another video game I fell in love with this year is called Days Gone. And I might have talked about it a little bit. I fell in love with that game. Like I beat it and almost, I'm not a platinum trophy guy, but I almost got platinum on that. Wow. I love that game because I think at first everything is so it's meant to be to where everything is super, super difficult until you get powerful enough for it not to be super difficult.
Right.
And I think it turns off a lot of players when you're not that powerful from the beginning nowadays. And I think RoboCop did a good job of that with ramping up difficulty and making it feel like as you're progressing, they're throwing more and more at you. And I was a big fan. I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm kind of bummed it's over. Like, I'm hoping they do an expansion or something like
that. I know, I was thinking that too. All right, Jody, give us some horror news.
All right, so let's talk about releases first off. Poor Things just released in theaters in the last week or so. And
is that really horror? I've heard different takes on it.
Frankenstein-style story, right?
Yeah. Like, as a movie, it's not really horror. I mean, it obviously has horror and the horror element of, you know, the Frankenstein bits, but like our friend Whitney saw it and she said, no, it's not horror, but
she did also say though that it was her top movie of the year. So
yeah. And I've heard a lot of that.
Glowing recommendation. Yeah.
Yeah. It's in limited release right now. And I think even when they go wide, it's still not a full wide release. Cause I was looking to see if I could see it anywhere around where I live. There's nothing.
It's kind of bummed me out because they're doing a lot of early release too. And the theater I always go see movies at, because it's a Regal by my house and I have the Regal pass, has had a giant, giant fucking cutout for Poor Things, but they're not part of the early release. So I'm on vacation next week. So I already have my ticket to go see it on Thursday.
Nice. Another movie that just came out, Jen Wexler's The Sacrifice Game, just released on Shudder. I haven't watched it yet. I know it's Christmas based, and I have liked Jen Wexler's other movie, The Ranger. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, so I know you did that. I liked The Ranger a lot.
Yeah, same director.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm definitely interested in checking this one out.
What's the elevator pitch, Mondo?
Dude, you know, what's funny is as we're saying about this, I can't remember a thing right now. My brain's just not working that great. It's been a long day.
You've got a murderous gang going from place to place.
Making people sacrifice
at Christmas. Like they go into houses. Okay.
Their goal, they say it's in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Their goal is to summon a demon.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm down for that.
And it goes some batshit crazy ways and some really fun directions it went into. I kind of picked up the twist about halfway through, but I was like, if this is the twist, it's going to be cool. And it was. And I was like, yes.
All right. That sounds fun.
I might watch that one tonight, actually. Other news. We got word today that John Waters is going to be returning to the Chuckyverse after his appearance in Bride of Chucky. He is joining the Chucky series as the creator of the Good Guy doll. So I'm always down for more John Waters. Mm-hmm. He is delightful in everything he shows up in. And also,
Chucky. This season's been great. I can't wait for the second half.
Yeah. Just so many good things in that series.
I mean, you got Jennifer Tilly. What more do you need, really?
Okay. There you go. We found out today that they are actively developing Orphan Part 3, a sequel. I gotta say, First Kill was pretty fun. Okay,
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's fun. It's got a weird twist in it that's different than the twist in the first movie.
But it's definitely worth watching.
I think my problem was I saw The Boy before I watched Orphan, and I'm not going to lie, I thought that was pretty stupid. This
is better than The Boy. I think both of them are better than The Boy.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would say Orphan is better than Boy, yeah.
But, I'm also impressed with the fact that they can keep putting Isabella Furman in Pigtails and letting her just play herself as a little girl, even though she's like 25 now or later.
It's a little creepy, and I mean that like in the best way possible. Like, it's fucking...
I appreciate, You saw It Chapter 2, where they digitally de-aged all the kids and they all kind of look off. This is just her, they use camera angles and stuff to make her be the little girl again. Man, so
I can rant about It Chapter 2 because my daughter and I, on back-to-back nights, we saw Midsommar and then we saw It Chapter 2. One movie was amazing. One, I was like, why the fuck did I waste 2 hours of my life watching this fucking
three
movie?
3 hours of your life.
Dude, all I know is, spoiler alert, but they bullied the clown to death. Yeah. That's the exact opposite message of the book It.
I want my It to eventually end someday. Some version of it end with a cosmic battle that involves biting of tongues and a giant turtle. You know, this is what I need from my It.
Mostly the whole Welcome to Derry is moving forward now.
Yeah,
I did see that. Which, I mean, that could be actually pretty interesting with the backstories and everything.
Mm-hmm. All right, one more piece of news. We found out a couple days ago that we are officially getting Saw 11 next year, September 27th, 2024.
As much as I love Saw 10, I'm like, ugh. Just end on that note. Like, and again, I'll go see it. They have instilled enough goodwill in me to go see it.
But money.
Old Saw movies, aside from maybe the first and second, are best watched while you're on your phone doing something else, and just look up every now and again to see why someone's getting killed. Because the plot's pretty convoluted. But I loved Saw 10, and I'm hoping Saw 11.
Right.
They build up some.
Yeah. I feel like they captured some magic with that one, and then they're using different writers. So I'm like, I don't know if they're gonna be able to make.
But then again,
I'm hoping they have something really good up their sleeve because that was a miracle what they did with that with number 10.
Then again, though, imagine this. So imagine Halloween Ends is announced as coming out and they canned David Gordon Green and brought a different writer in.
Okay.
At the time, you might have been like, what the fuck? But after watching that movie, you might be like, oh, okay, I'm glad they brought a different writer. Whatever.
Halloween is what makes me cautious when I hear about some sequel coming out, because I'm like, okay, Saw 10, great. Also, though, Halloween 2018, also great.
Yes.
And we went downhill.
Halloween 2018 before Godzilla Minus One was the last movie I saw in theaters multiple times. I think I saw it three times in the theater. I saw it at a pre-screening. Then two of my friends wanted to go see it. So I saw it each individual with them and loved it every time. And again, I am a defender of Halloween Kills. I enjoyed Halloween Kills, except for the whole hospital scene. Other than that, I really enjoyed that movie. Halloween Ends, I think, had its moments, but it's not what fans wanted as the bookend of the series. I think if that would have been sandwiched like in between 5 and 6, no one really questioned it. But the fact it was considered the penultimate Halloween movie is what really soured a lot of people. And I'm with you, Jody. The more I think about it, the more I can't fucking stand Corey. So.
Tonight I get to be the grumpy one, and Mondo is like being generous to Halloween Ends. Like, it has good moments. I'm like, okay, so Halloween 2018 was great. Halloween Kills, still pretty good. Had some amazing scenes. The firefighter stuff, you know, there's good stuff in Halloween Kills. Halloween Ends fell off of just off the cliff.
I love how you just stifled your F word as if we don't curse all the time.
I don't want to be complaining the entire episode tonight. How did we get on Halloween Ends?
One more real
after I already watched a bird face pop out of a man.
One more cool little horror news is the season finale just happened for 30 Coins season 2. And I hope everyone out there is watching this series. If you guys aren't watching this series, let's fucking get with the program, guys. Because it's funny because season 1 was batshit crazy. And I'm like, well, what are they going to do with season 2? And then it's more batshit crazy. Like it just up the ante even more and more. And I will tell you, for any horror fan out there, it is a treat. I would recommend, at least in my opinion. So season 1 is only in Spanish with English subtitles. It's so popular in the U.S. that in season 2, they actually put subtitles. They actually put an English dub version of it. I don't like the English dubs a lot of times because it just looks so inorganic. And they're in Spain, like speaking Spanish. But what I do love about it is all the Spanish characters will be in subtitle. But when they do like Paul Giamatti speaking, it's just in English, obviously.
Sure.
Okay. But God damn it, what a great show that is. And season, I'll be honest, like with the very ending, I was like, what are they going to do with season 3? But I'm also like, I have faith that it's going to be just over the top fucking crazy. Jason, happy Hanukkah.
Oh, thank you. It's last night.
Last night, yeah.
So,
8 crazy nights.
Yeah.
Is there anything, so on the 8th night, is there any like special thing you guys do for the end of Hanukkah?
Most people in my house are sick with something right now, one thing or another. So we just kind of lit and just give a present and call it good.
That's cool. Traditionally, is there like anything you guys do like at the
I mean, this is my little soapbox is that, like, religiously speaking, it's actually a very minor holiday.
I know that.
All you need to do really just light the candles and that's it. There's nothing else really about it, but again, because of proximity to Christmas, it's become a much bigger thing. So like, oh, Jews have their holiday too. It's become a big thing with the gifts and everything else. So
okay, I know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, and we're happy to, you know, add cultural significance and, you know, pump up a holiday, but people ask about it, you know.
Yeah,
but I just like to kind of explain that, you know, sometimes something starts, you know, relatively small and is made bigger through cultural evolution.
That's cool. No, I like that. I was just wondering. I don't know a ton about it, and I always am interested to learn about other people's cultures.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, the basic, you know, people tried to kill the Jews and destroy their culture, and we prevailed and kicked ass. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of these holidays. Let's go to our Patreon pit. Our question of the week is, what animal trait do you wish you could have? So I list some examples like running as fast as a cheetah, eyesight of an eagle. We had a couple of answers. I'll just try to pick the best.
It reminds me of that old cartoon Marshall Bravestar. Do you guys remember that? When he'd be like, "Eye of the Eagle," and he could suddenly see really far away. Oh, really? What if I messed up that name? I'm gonna look it up while you guys are talking.
All right, our friend Tommy said, "I like the lifestyle of a house cat. Sleep 19 hours a day. Don't have to worry about where my next meal comes from, and someone else to clean up after me."
I can get behind that.
Yeah. I'd be a little more on the dog side than the cat, but yeah.
And also, you're a fucking killer. You can just fucking go kill whatever you want because you're a little badass. I was cleaning up the dog poop yesterday on my turf, and I found like 3 rat tails. because my cat has murdered. Mm-hmm.
Just for
there's a very sad family of mice out there without a father anymore.
Okay, and our friend Janet says that she wishes she could fly. And yeah, I think I'm going with flying. Flying would be pretty badass.
Unless you had a beak pop out of your face because you were flying. I don't know why you would have a beak, but hey, who knows? Sometimes you hear things and you get a beak.
Well, if you're flying, you got stuff flying at your face, you need to be able to deflect.
Okay, sure.
No, that was a reach.
Flying. Yeah, that flying definitely would be high on that list.
Flying would be cool. You gotta deal with airplanes though and stuff. Like, what I want is a snake implanted where I'm just kidding. I want a prehensile penis, like that I can grab things with and use as a tool. Like, could you imagine? Like, I'm gonna BJJ, I'm a jiu-jitsu tournament, and the guy's like, I got his arms trapped, and my penis just comes out and chokes him. Like, there's nothing in the rule book that says that's illegal. I'm just saying.
Started with BJ, and I was like, "Where is he going with that?"
I was going to say BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but it turns, it sounds too much like a blowjob. But could you imagine that though? Like, I'm just going to choke this guy to death with my penis, but not in the way you think. It's going to work like an anaconda because that's what was replaced. it's legal. They'd have to write a new rule based on me.
That's the Airbud rule, right? Like, nothing in the rule says a dog can't play basketball.
I thought about this. My oldest dog, my Chihuahua, just turned 16 a week ago. We celebrate her birthday same day. We celebrate my daughter's birthday. That's when we got her. But I'll say she's 16 now. I don't think anywhere in the DMV rule book it says a dog can't get a driver's permit if they can pass the test. Like, what if I just take her and have her just hammer on that fucking keyboard? And see what happens. Maybe she passes and gets her driver's permit, and then we start working on that driver's license. I don't know.
How was your daughter's 21st birthday?
I don't know. She didn't want to hang out with her family. Nice. She's here for like an hour, and then for 21st birthday, man, she went and they did a hotel suite. She went and got a hotel suite, had a great time with her friends. Like, she had a cool time. Right. The next morning, she came home, and I was like, "You look like shit." Which, whatever, man, it's cool. Like, I'm hoping to go take her for a beer over one of my favorite places maybe tomorrow. We'll see, because it's kind of cool that we can do that now. But I feel old, man. God damn it, I feel old. I'm gonna make her buy me a beer though. I think that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I put up with your shit for 20 years 21 years right?
So now you've graduated to paying.
And then hey, I think it's all fair. All fair.
Yeah.
Oh, but really, my animal trait would be, I actually have a real one though. The most impressive thing to me in the whole animal world is the dog's ability to live in the moment. Whereas dogs don't worry about tomorrow or yesterday or what's going to happen in the future. They're just like, whatever's happening right now, that's the shit. And I think about it sometimes because my dachshund, my cuddle buddy, when she calls up on top of me and I'm like, oh crap, I need to get up and go to the bathroom. I'm like, you know what? Like, I can just wait because this is her moment and she's loving this moment. And I wish as humans we had more of those moments. So I think we're often thinking to the future or thinking into the past. And I would love that ability to just always be able to just 100% of the time live in the moment.
Nice.
Sorry to bring that back around to something a little bit deeper than.
No, I mean, and that just kind of can dovetail into our dad advice. Unless you guys had something specific, but I think we've all kind of had rough days on our own ways. But I think, you know, we can take a moment and, you know, enjoy being in the company of each other, creating a podcast.
Yeah, 100%, man. And you know what? Like, before we did this, I was on the couch like, fuck, I got to go watch the episode and record this podcast. And I was not in a good place mentally, right? But yeah, I mean, like, then I got to spend an hour talking with two of my favorite people in the world and life's a little bit better. And as they say with most things, this too will pass, right? Like,
yes.
At the end of the day, man, I look back to when my wife and I first got together, and I don't know if ever, I think we told the story like on a really early episode. If you want, go back and listen to it. But we met when we were young. I moved out when I was 18. We got together and we had no fucking money. Like, we're watching the same 5 DVDs of all time. No money for cable. My computer chair was a fucking milk crate, right? My end table was 3 VCR boxes I had duct taped together. And but we weren't unhappy.
Yeah.
At no point were we unhappy. No, we enjoy each other's company. And I think sometimes as you get older and as life gets more complicated, you sometimes forget those little things. Like, is this water leak in my house and cost me 10 grand? Maybe. Is it going to be the end of the world? No. Like, life's going to move forward and it's going to be okay. At the end of the day, it's just fucking money.
Yeah.
Keep going. How do you, so let me ask you, a question. When you guys are having a bad day, what gets you out of your bad day? Or what do you try to focus on?
I like to do a lot of breathing exercises, like apps and things like that help you kind of, because I think the first thing you got to kind of do is kind of, you know, find a physiological way to kind of, you know, change your whatever, you know, because your mind and your body are so connected. So I think you need to find kind of a way to kind of redirect your energies in the way, for lack of a better term, your chi, well, whatever you want to call it.
I'm with you on that. I like that.
So I have, like, you know, those breathing apps and stuff. So I'll try doing some of that. And then, you know, just kind of like gives you that kind of like stops the train that's kind of running off the rails. I mean, obviously in order to do that, you have to recognize that you're running off the rails, and that's usually the hard part.
Yeah. That's tough. In follow up question is it, in granted, like, we're not, my wife and I are not the best at this in our relationship, but is Kiera, your wife, good at saying like, hey dude, you're running off the rails, you need to take a step back? That I think that's like the handful of times my wife has done that to me, it's been really impactful in the most positive way possible.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, I like to unwind by, or get out of whatever funk I'm in. If people are available, I like to hang out with family, watch a movie. A lot of times is a good place for me, because, you know, get a little escapism in there. Breathing exercises are nice. Sometimes breathing exercises, when you're breathing in something for a little while, is handy. But, you know, find ways to take care of yourself.
Jody, for all his squeaky clean mannerisms, is loves his weed, and more power to him. That dude's got, Jody has a tolerance unlike what I have. Like, I don't know. I told a story about Chattanooga Film Festival with my 10 milligram fucking can of devil water, and I was high as a motherfucker. Jody just chugged the whole thing and goes, I should have gotten 25. and I'm sitting there just like floating above the stuff, above everybody.
Yeah, Mondo, as long as you make it back out to Chattanooga this year, they've just released a 50 milligram version.
Oh my god.
Which sounds like way too much for anybody. But, on our
Patreon of me just asleep in the aisle, like down, unmovable. And not through one movie. This has now been three movies, and they just have not been able to move me yet.
Yeah, you know, all of that, though, I could file under self-care. Mm-hmm. You know, just doing some stuff for yourself, doing some things that make you happy, make you feel good, help you relax.
You know, I think there's a big difference in someone needing, like, thinking they need, like, any kind of chemical substance to function throughout the day versus doing it because it just makes you feel better. And, like, the people out there that are like, I have friends that are straight edge and just kind of taking life on the chin every day. Dude, I have nothing but respect for that. I really do.
Yeah.
Like, there are times I feel like a fucking deviant. Like, no, like, I need, like, I haven't drank in weeks. Well, I mean, so I'm like, I need a couple beers tonight. And I think anything, you know, but it makes you happy. Like, that's important. That's very important.
You know, like, well, I mean, alternatively, if I know I have like a really big, boring thing I need to do at work, like, sometimes I'm doing like an IT validation where I have to just like go through lines of script and, you know, test it all and everything. Uh-huh. I got that, you know, that water spray, that water drip stuff that has caffeine in it.
Yeah.
I'm not a coffee drinker. Sometimes I'm too lazy to make a tea. Like
Mio or whatever. Yeah, that Mio, goes exactly. Your water enhancers. They call me. That's cool.
Yeah. So sometimes I'll do some of that. Just, and I'm not like snorting or anything, like, you know, going crazy, but sometimes I just need to pick me up in the afternoon.
I love caffeine.
I'm not like a coffee drinker, and I like tea, but sometimes it's a little bit stronger.
I love coffee. I love chai. Do you guys like chai tea?
I like chai tea. I love me some chai tea.
I just ordered from this company about a month ago called Kolkata Chai, and holy shit, is it like the best chai tea I've ever had in my entire life.
Send me the link.
Insane. I'll send you guys a link. Shout out Kolkata Chai. We'll tag you in the episode because I think it was the they have a and some of my gym has it too, because they sent me a sticker with it. And I saw the sticker on someone else's water bottle, and it says get rich or chai trying. Nice. Speaking of getting rich or die trying, it might be the wrong band, but Wu-Tang Clan has announced a Las Vegas residency.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The fucking Wu-Tang Clan, which is crazy because, like, when I was younger, our residencies were like Lita Ford, and no knock on these people, but they're always kind of the older artists. And it's just, you know, guess what? We're the older people now with money that can go see the Wu-Tang Clan for $800 a night or whatever.
Well, when Blink-182 was there, I was like, oh, gosh, that makes me feel old.
Dude, for bands, though, man, like, residency is the way to go. Like, they make, it's a weekly fucking good paycheck.
Well, yeah, exactly. No, for an older band, and they have a family that they don't want to be schlepping around everywhere. I'm totally down for that. It's just, you know, we've always thought of it as like our parents' bands, but now it's our bands.
You know, what's funny is I listen to, according to my daughter, to dad metal. And I'm like, but this shit is fucking way heavier than the bullshit you fucking kids want to listen to nowadays. These are the fucking OGs that made this sound. And I just think it's funny because it's like, dude, like my bands are way fucking more extreme than yours are. And it's called dad metal. Well, that's cool. And I'll take that because it means we're fucking better.
Yeah. I'm still listening to Wayfarer, though. Good stuff.
Dude, I said that episode I was on, that American Gothic record is my album of the year probably now.
Like, really good.
It, top three at minimum, but damn it, that record just hit me in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it a lot.
And yeah, what else I listened to just recently? Oh, Bewitcher put out their new Deep Cuts and Shallow Graves record, which is their old cuts and a couple new songs. And a band I mentioned here before, Ancient Wisdom. I say Wisdom because it's got the two V's, like the witch. they were the witch. They just released a new single, I Sold My Soul to Satan. And I'm a big fan.
Nice.
And fucking, there's been a lot of good albums this year. Like it's always hard for me because I've been trying to be better with Letterboxd so I can kind of see what I watch throughout the year. Because, I'm bad with albums. And they had that app, and I know Jody was on it for a little bit. That app where you can track what you listen to. I need to start doing that too. Just to keep track what I listen to.
Yeah, that might be my new resolution, is to be better at Letterboxing.
Yeah, my goal has been whenever I watch a movie in the theater, I'll letterbox it and then I'll post it on social media just because, like, it's in the theater, people should go see it. But and then while we're on the subject of movies again, fucking Godzilla Minus One, everybody just go see Godzilla Minus One. Just go see it.
It's so fucking good.
I saw it in IMAX and then I saw it in 4DX. 4DX is not for me. It just is not. It's like a motion ride at a theme park, and they have water sprays you in the face, and there are some really cool aspects of it, but it just wasn't for me. And I'm not saying it was a bad experience. Like, the people around me, like the people next to me, had two parents and their kids. They had a fucking blast. Those kids were laughing their asses off, having the best time. That's who it's for. Like, go have an awesome time in 4DX. Just not for me.
Yeah. See, I could see the 4DX working better with more of like the legendary Godzilla movies, like the other stream of Godzilla that's happening right now, Godzilla versus Kong and all that, because those are more fun. And so, like, I could see that being more like, you know, when he's shooting a beam through the earth and all this kind of stuff. Okay, that's fun.
This
Godzilla was a little more serious. Like, I don't know if I could get into all the, like, moving around and water spraying in my face. But I'm also crying about this man.
Yeah, while they're trying water at you while he's crying his tears.
Yeah. I'm really glad I wasn't the only person at the end of that movie that was like, trying to hold my shit together because damn it, that's a good movie. Like, I didn't expect a kaiju movie to have such a human story to it, and it was I'll say perfectly done. The best Godzilla ever, in my opinion. And probably just a hair above the original. If you told me I was wrong, I wouldn't argue with you. Like, I think a lot of people are going to love the original more, and I've heard people who didn't really like this, and I just don't understand.
I don't understand that.
We were talking about our rankings, and I think it's hard to find someone that's seen every single Godzilla movie because there's so goddamn many of them. But
I haven't seen all of them.
Yeah. During pandemic, I tried to watch as many of them as I could because there's a lot of them are on HBO Max. I got through a lot of them, but I think my ranking would probably be the OG and then Destroy All Monsters and then this one.
Okay. I respect that. I'd probably say my or this one, then the OG, then Destroy All Monsters. Probably very, very similar.
Destroy All Monsters is just like, has everything.
That was so much. Like, the smartest thing Toho did was like, you know what? Let's just throw all these monsters in the same pit and see what happens.
Yeah, all at once.
And if anyone too has seen it and they're kind of on Kaiju right now, Gamera, there have been a few new Gamera movies over the years. Mm. And I watched the one that came out, I think it was 2016. I forget the name of it, but it was fucking great. I think Toho is really getting a knack for building a human story into a Kaiju movie. And it's I mean, I love Godzilla 2014 for the main reason why it was a human story that happened to have these Kaiju monsters. And then you finally get the big fight at the end after all that buildup and all that edging. Then you it was fucking worth it. It was a climax worth experiencing.
All right. On that note, that wraps up another episode. Next week, we'll be covering a movie. I have an idea. We'll talk about it. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you give us a rating and review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Toodaloo.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.